Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Real Estate Pros, the podcast for real estate business owners, salespeople, and property managers, where you'll get marketing ideas, inspiring interviews, actionable tips and strategies to help grow your business. I'm Josh Cobb. Seems like just about everyone today is talking about disruption in real estate. But through all of the hype, what is really fact and what is fiction? In this episode, I go behind the scenes with Samantha McLean, the editor at Elite Agent magazine, who recently conducted a thought leadership discussion on future business models in the real estate industry. The Getting Ready for 2020 report includes some of our country's finest business minds. And it's what I believe to be the most comprehensive report so far on the topic of disruption in real estate here in Australia. This episode is all about separating fact from fiction when it comes to disintermediation. To visualise what a real estate business could truly look like in the very near future, and how you can prepare your business for inevitable change. This episode is brought to you by Steps, advanced real estate websites and digital marketing solutions. Learn more at steps.com.au. So I'm joined today by Samantha McLean, the managing editor at Elite Agent magazine. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Josh.
So for those folks who don't know who you are, tell us a little bit about Elite Agent and a little bit about what you do on a day-to-day basis and your background in publishing and real estate and all that stuff.
Yeah, so Elite Agent is a magazine we started about a year ago. Some people may know me as I was the editor of Sold magazine and I was working for somebody else at the time. And when Sold magazine finished publishing, it was really quite hard for me because it was a job that I really loved. And so, you know, when they say that you really love something, then you should pursue it anyway. And I guess after many emails from people in the industry saying, you know, where's our magazine kind of thing, I decided to do one myself. So that's how Elite Agent actually came about, was that I took all of my knowledge and experience, I guess, learnt on the job while I was the editor of Sold and Leased and Principal, and I guess added in a bit of my own special sauce into that to create Elite Agent magazine.
Yeah, cool. Well, tell us a little bit about what does your day-to-day look like these days?
So day to day, you know, like I suppose I like to go to the gym of a morning. So that's one thing that, you know, is not negotiable for me these days. But generally the days start pretty early. So with emails and things like that, although some of the productivity experts say don't start with your emails, like I kind of do while it's still dark. And depending on where we are in our publishing cycle, I'll be either organising content or organising interviews with other people, perhaps organising videos because we're doing a lot of videos to supplement the printed magazine because, you know, it's really nice to sort of see what's going on behind the scenes.
For sure.
That sort of thing. And so I'll kind of get all of that out of the way in the morning so that I can go and meet people in the afternoon. So whether it's, you know, a face-to-face interview or whether it's meeting with an advertiser or something like that, yeah. I generally follow the real estate industry routine of mornings in and afternoons out.
Yeah. Cool. And Mark, your husband, is in the business with you. We had the pleasure of meeting over in San Francisco this year. That was and on your way back, you guys got married in Hawaii.
Yes, we did. That was a pretty exciting time. So yeah. I guess we surprised a few people, but it had been on the cards for a while. You know, Eamon was fun from a couple of angles. Obviously, we got to meet some fantastic people and learned heaps while we were over there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and then I sort of spent the last day or so in San Francisco looking for a dress to get married in. So that was kind of fun. It was kind of fun to land in Hawaii and do that and then come back and let everyone know.
No doubt. Well, look, there's plenty of publishers and content creators going digital. Everyone's talking digital. I know over in San Francisco at the conference, everyone was talking about digital. But why did you decide to go down the print magazine? I'm really curious to know.
Because I think different audiences like different things, and I guess, you know, like we'll probably get onto this a bit later when we talk about the 2020 report, but just like, you know, when you're prospecting or selling in real estate, you can't treat every prospect the same is probably the reason that that the print magazine exists. So it's not to say that digital is not important to us, because it really is. You know, we put a lot of work into our website and our digital properties and the app and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But people still like a printed magazine. And, you know, for me, there's one thing I really love when I open a box of fresh magazines is the smell, which is a bit like, you know, there was a scene in one of those Sex and the City movies where, you know, Big says to Carrie, "Why do you persevere with books?" You know, and she says, "Because I like the smell." And I think, you know, for a lot of people, pulling out a real book or a real magazine or something like that and being able to touch and turn the pages and things like that, it's a bit of a tactile experience where, you know, you can grab a coffee and sit down and have some quiet time, or, you know, even for some people say that, you know, it's wine time of an evening that they like to flip through the pages of the magazine and, you know, when the day's over and it's just a bit more relaxing than all of the emails that, you know, tend to come in during the day.
For sure. Well, some folks might not know just how much effort goes into creating a monthly print magazine. Can you give us an overview of what it takes to put this together each month? What does the process look like from concept to the magazine actually arriving in the office?
Yeah. So each issue we kind of have a theme. So the last issue was technology, and the issue coming up is marketing. So we'll generally have a bit of a... you know, a theme that we will work around. And the magazine does follow a bit of a set format. So, you know, we'll choose our cover agents reasonably early in the piece. And then we'll have like another major story, which is something that we will create via interviewing people or some piece of, you know, premium content that we'll create on our own.
Sure.
And then in and around that, like, we have a lot of industry contributors. So I'm very fortunate that a lot of people like to write for the magazine, and I'm very fortunate to be approached by a lot of the PR staff and things like that in the franchises, of people that actually have, you know, some great points of view and enjoy being published and all of that sort of thing. So and of course we have our regulars too, so, you know, I'm talking to them constantly to sort of make sure that they're on topic and that, you know, that the material's relevant and all that sort of stuff. So so they're the main components of the magazine, is that, you know, like, we'll sort of look at what the regulars are doing first. We'll look at what we're doing. We'll do the interviewing and things like that. We've got a really great partnership with industry media, and often we'll get them to do the photography for the cover and the inside stories, plus a supplementary video. And then, of course, the magazine, people send their work in, and obviously sometimes with me it's right. then everything will go through a pretty stringent proofing process. So I have a sub-editor that will go over things pretty much with a fine-tooth comb, so that to bring, you know, everyone's writing's different. So it's basically to bring everything to a particular standard. And then I'll take it back and I'll look at the headlines and, you know, make sure that everything's sort of congruent and fits and all that sort of thing. Then it all goes off to layout where... the magic happens, and, you know, I've got a great designer, Mark Norris from Chorus Design. There you go. There's a plug.
Hello to Mark.
Yeah, hello to Mark. I often say our partnership's a bit like, you know, Lennon McCartney or Bon Jovi, Sambora, you know, someone on lyrics and someone on music, and you have to have both for the magazine to really jump off the page. And sometimes it's a little bit difficult, because it's not about making sure that, you know, the content is different, but you've got to keep a certain energy going through the pages to keep people turning the pages.
For sure.
And so, you know, again, like a good rock concert, it's got to hit various notes. You can't have all ballads and you can't have all, you know, headbanging heavy metal. So we do try and make sure that, you know, the magazine is, you know, a good as far as being a page turner.
Yeah, I love that. Love that analogy. I'm curious to know, how do you go about selecting, let's say, for example, the agents on the cover of the magazine? How does that process look, and what do you look for?
Yeah, okay. So it's very much that the Elite Agent brand means a lot to Mark and I. And so when we really thought about what values we wanted these people to embody, you know, again, they're all E words, so it's elevate, educate and entertain are the three things that we look for when we're featuring people on the cover.
Yeah.
And by elevate, I mean what we really want to do is tell good stories about people in the industry, because there's a lot of media out there that, let's face it, is not so flattering, and I'm not sure with great reason, because in all of the people that I've interviewed, I have found that a lot of agents, or the great majority actually, are hardworking individuals who have got families like you and I, and, you know, and it's hard, it's competitive, it's, you know, some of the people I talk to, you know, like sometimes, you know, it's the smallest of edges or margins that can mean success or otherwise, depending on your market. So we look for people that obviously have good sales numbers and are in the top, you know, the top of their markets. But we also look for people, I guess, that have some other qualities about them as well, because, you know, service to the community is really important for agents, I think, and that's something that we look for. You know, we make sure too that, you know, if they're part of a franchise, like we'll always go to the franchise and say, is this somebody that, you know, you would like to have represented by your brand?
Sure.
So they're the main things. Like, you know, we like to make sure that they're good in their market as far as sales figures go, but they've also they're also good in other areas, which is is giving
good
back.
All rounder. Yeah. I love those three words: elevate, educate, and entertain. And look, you've mentioned these to me a couple of times, and something worth mentioning as well. You won an award last night. Tell us a little bit about the award and what that means to you.
So we became members of Publishers Australia pretty soon after, actually before we printed our first issue of Elite Agent, which was back in September last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess, again, the brand is important to us and drives a lot of decisions internally for us. So we sort of felt that we couldn't call the magazine Elite Agent and not be members of the bodies that matter in the publishing industry. So we joined... Sure. Publishers Australia, and we also joined the Audited Media Association of Australia, so and they audit our distribution and all of that sort of thing, so that everyone can be sure that how many copies are going out there is actually correct, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So the award was the Publishers Australia Award for Business Editor of the Year, and it was something that, you know, Mark said, you know, you should throw your hat in the ring for that, and you know, thinking that it was kind of a year in that it would be nice to make the finals.
Yeah.
And, when they read my name out last night as the winner, I was pretty stoked.
Congrats. It's fantastic.
Yeah. In fact, I nearly forgot to kiss the guy that, you know, was handing me the award. I was just so, so stoked by it. But I suppose, yeah, look, it means a lot to me because I suppose of the journey that I've been on, you know, from, you know, losing my job with Sold to going and recreating that job in my own business and then being recognised in the industry is pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. What I'm curious to know as well, what how you go about incorporating the digital aspect of the magazine. So obviously when someone you know, receives that magazine in the office, I enjoy getting it every month. I look forward to getting it every month. And you're right, it has that sort of tactile nature to it, something that you can sit down and you can feel, you can smell the magazine, as you said.
Ink. Yeah.
So I'm curious to know how your digital medium, so the eliteagent.com.au, complements the magazine, and do you have different content in one than the other? How does that look?
So we do have different content in one to the other. So not everything that's in the magazine goes online, and sometimes, you know, we do online only stories.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, when you're sort of looking at things like video and stuff like that,
yeah.
You know, if someone's seen something in the magazine, then they might want to go online to watch the video. And we always do videos of our cover agents.
For sure. No, look, there's definitely a lot of emotion, and I think you guys are great at telling stories, not only in print, but on the web and in your videos as well. So congrats for that. But something I'd love to sort of switch to and have a bit of a chat about is this this word disintermediation or disruption that's getting thrown around a lot these days, I think, and it's something we've spoken about at length off air.
Yeah, sure.
What do you think about the idea of the real estate industry being disrupted by someone or something? Are we overplaying this idea, do you think, of disruption or are we underplaying the threat it poses to real estate professionals? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so what it seems to me is that there's a lot of people out there already claiming to be the Uber of real estate, and it's, you know, that's been a really overused phrase. With Uber, I mean, it's quite interesting because, you know, when you look at what a disruptor really is, usually a disruptor comes from a different industry and is usually not someone that you would traditionally consider competition.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, usually someone you think might be beneath you, which is why you don't, hence the word disruption, you don't see it coming. Mm. As far as, the people that are sort of claiming to be the Uber of real estate, they're actually in real estate already. Mm. So they are competition, and I don't think really that is where the disruption is going to come from, if it's going to come. And I do think that there will be some, you know, I guess part of the 2020 report we did, we got some really smart people in the room and sort of said, all right, what's going to happen in the next 20 years kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there is definitely going to be some changes, and, you know, we can come back to those in a moment. But I don't think that, you know, that those that are claiming that they are the Uber of real estate now really are.
Mm-hmm. Well, so some people might be, they might have heard of, you know, companies like opendoor.com or SQFT or just on a couple of those. Are there any others that you know of that some of our listeners might not be aware of?
Yeah, they're the main ones on the technology side, I think, those ones in America. And the problem I see with them is, you know, like, again, disruptors solve problems. And if you think about what some of the real problems in the industry are, or what I think they are, is number one, if you were to consider like the biggest pain point for a consumer, I think in Australia, in this country, it's the amount of hands and the time for settlement, like, you know, that sort of occurs. And it's different in every state because of different legislation and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So if I was going to, sort of disrupt with technology, that would be probably where I would start. And some of these, like, you know, the Squarefoot and Open Door and those guys, I think I noticed somewhere that there's still a real estate agent monitoring the transaction end to end anyway.
Yeah,
so the real estate agent hasn't been taken out of the transaction. It's just that they're using technology more effectively. But in Australia, with conveyancing laws and things like that, the way they are and the way that settlement occurs between all of these other parties, I think that would need to be taken into account. And, I don't think our legislation would cater for that right now.
Mm. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, SQFT and Open Door, do you want to describe for our listeners what those platforms and those technologies actually do?
Yeah, so from memory, Squarefoot is an app that you can download onto your iPhone, and if you want to sell your property, you can put the details into this app and press a button, and it will distribute your property to all of the portals or the MLSs in the US, which work a little bit differently to our portal system. And then people can come and make an offer on that, on the portal, which will come through to your app, which you can then accept or reject. Open Door is a little bit different because you can register with Open Door and Open Door will buy the property for you. Sometimes they will
buy it from you.
They'll buy it from you.
Yeah.
So they're actually the buyer, or the intermediate buyer.
So the platform Open Door owns the property.
They will own the property. So they'll come along and make you an offer, which may be lower than what you might get if you were going to auction or going on the market normally. And then they will do one of two things. They will renovate, like, you know, they'll make some changes and then, you know, flip it like that, or they'll just flip it. They have, I think, 30 million dollars. They just raised $30 million or something like that, some ridiculous number. So there's a lot of money in America, as we saw when we're at Inman.
For sure.
You know, around these, you know, disruptive type apps and the development of those.
Definitely. There's, yeah, that was what blew me away, I think, the most was the amount of money that is floating around the United States at the moment. I think they've been sitting on a lot of cash for a long, long time. There's a lot of mergers and acquisitions at the moment, not just in real estate, but in the tech space and software and things like that. I was having dinner with someone last night here in Sydney that was telling me about another company in New York that he came across on his travels called Compass. Have you heard of Compass?
No.
So Compass apparently are stealing a lot of agents, not stealing, sorry, they're attracting a lot of agents from two of the major groups in New York, which is the Corcoran Group and, forgive me, I've forgotten who the second group was now, but essentially the two biggest players in New York have 70% market share among them, which is fascinating, right?
Yep.
To only two companies have 70% of the market share in a huge market, and this third player is now coming into what is traditionally a stronghold for those two businesses and is attracting agents because of all the technology that they can provide, not necessarily doing real estate much differently, but the technology enables them to do their job faster. And that's why they're getting a lot of agents coming to Compass.
Yeah.
So that's something that some of our listeners might not be aware of as well.
Yeah, well, see, I see that as more of a threat because, you know, like if you look at some of the studies, and there's been a few in the media lately of what jobs are still going to be around in 20 years' time. So we're looking at 2035. You know, if you're a personal trainer, you're fairly safe. You know, there's a 0.5% chance that, you know, your job is going to be gone in 2035 because we're all getting more concerned about our health.
Sure.
But what, you know, what PwC has found is that 82% of real estate jobs as we know them now are at risk. And it is for the reason that, you know, technology can create productivity when used very well. And it's not to say that there won't be any real estate jobs around because I don't want to frighten anyone. That's not my purpose here today. And besides, by 2035, some of us might have retired with any luck. You know, so we're sort of talking about, you know, the young people that are sort of coming up here now.
Yeah.
And that is that, you know, that these jobs will change and there will be, you know, agents that use technology well to its fullest extent.
Yeah.
Who can spend more time with people and more time getting to know their audience, more time analysing the data that they already have, or, you know, at least using technology to be able to enable that.
Yeah, I think it's such a great point, and a lot of people talk about, you know, disruption and disintermediation, but I think I've always been of the belief that technology will never replace agents,
no.
But agents who use it effectively will replace agents. And I was, again, same gentleman last night I was having dinner with, he took a phone call over dinner from a referral client from one of their colleagues, and it was a $7 million property. And he asked, simply said, who should I give it to in my local market? Which you cannot, no technology can replace that, right?
No.
So I think in certain markets that will be a technology and nothing will ever replace that, but I think it's, do you think it's in different markets will be affected differently? Do you think like different price points and demographics? What do you think?
Absolutely. What I think will happen, and you know, to a similar extent, you know, I mean, publishing is an industry that's been disrupted and continues to be disrupted. So
absolutely. Yeah,
I can draw some parallels between, you know, what's happening in the publishing industry in general and in the real estate industry in general. So you won't be able to speak to everyone the same way that you do now. Mm. So more and more people want to be treated as individuals. And so that may mean, you know, I prefer reading a print magazine versus an email versus something on the web.
Mm.
Or that may mean, look, I really want to deal with someone who understands me. So a great example of that was an interview that I did in Hawaii on the way back, actually. I was really keen to meet Dan Ahara, who is a Keller Williams agent. And what really impressed me about Dan and about his business model is that, you know, he is, you know, he's into a niche, which happens to be seniors. Now, seniors have special needs in real estate. So it may be that they've been in the same property for a long time and, you know, they've got a lot of stuff built up around them. So they need help decluttering, moving, storing stuff, being relocated. And also then on the other side, then you've got their kids who, you know, they need to be looked after as well. So they may not want the big place. They may want something smaller or something, you know, something with their kids that's more appropriate for their family.
Mm.
So Dan and his team, you know, they speak regularly to the retirement villages and things like that. They don't give financial advice, but they have that vertical horizontal integration, which kind of says, okay, this is who we use for this, and they understand your needs during retirement, all of the storage, all the decluttering, all that sort of stuff, you know, and it's particular to that cohort, let's say. They handle that end to end. And see, I really think that that will be the way that it will go, is that you as a real estate agent will need to pick a tribe or pick a couple of tribes and know exactly how you're going to market to them.
Mm, interesting. Yeah, there's another, an example that I've used in some presentations recently of a lady in Brisbane who, very similar approach. So her focus, she's a property manager, and her focus is on helping airline staff, so flight attendants and pilots, find property to rent in and around Brisbane, around the airport. And Virgin, she realised Virgin had moved their head office in Australia to Bowen Hills in Brisbane. So her her focus was to help airline staff find property to rent that was easy to get to the airport. She knew the quickest routes to the airport from whichever suburb they're going to live in, and that's her niche. And she is now the person to go to when it comes to as an airline pilot or a flight attendant or anyone relating to the airlines, and that's where they go. And she's quite comfortable running a successful business.
Because they talk to each other. So, you know, like from one airline pilot to another, you know, like who did you use? And they'll go, oh, this person understands our industry, our lives, all that sort of thing.
Mm.
And, you know, and I think that's where Team Ahara has been so successful.
Absolutely.
Because when, you know, if you're retiring, it's like that's the guy you've got to go to. Mm. There is no one else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of agents have thought in the past, look, if I go down that route of speciality instead of, you know, generalizing, just selling and listing and selling for everyone, I think their fear is that they're going to shut out other segments of the market. But I think what the Ahara team have done, and this particular girl up in Brisbane have done, by natural attrition, they attract people from those other segments anyway, but that wasn't their focus. And they were very successful very quickly because they niched down at the start, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, because I do think if you know who your tribe is and you've got a niche, it's easier to market. It's easier to, you know, have the right resources around you that, you know, whether it's, you know, for airline pilots is obviously going to be different to, you know, to seniors. But, you know, like if I could give you another example, you know, I interviewed Dusty Baker. He's going to be in the next issue of
Elite Agent
as well.
Dusty Baker.
Great name. He's in Santa Barbara, and he's also a Keller Williams agent.
We should just say for people that don't know Keller Williams, though, how many agents have they got? About 170,000.
I don't know, but they're like the Uber franchise, I think.
They're the biggest franchise in America.
In America,
yeah.
And then they're known for the good work that they do. I think, you know, I met Chris Heller when he was out in Australia a couple of years ago, and obviously Gary Keller is legendary, in the industry for writing The One Thing and, you know, and some other books as well. Keller Williams have got a lot of superstar agents and a lot of knowledge. Dusty's in Santa Barbara now. He's made a really good business there and been very successful on social media, Instagram particularly, and that was kind of the focus of the interview that I did with Dusty. So he's quite young, but he posts on Instagram every day. And so he's built up a following of, I think, 10,500 people on Instagram. And what is happening now is because he takes a lot of photos, like Santa Barbara is beautiful, you know, the beach and the you know, the architecture, and people go to Santa Barbara for their holidays all the time. So, yeah. You know, when you're sort of tagging things with Santa Barbara, you get a lot of people that want to buy holiday homes in Santa Barbara. And so now he's the go-to agent for people that, you know, are looking for holiday homes. And a lot of his business now is referrals from all around America for people that want to, you know. So, again, that's another little niche when you're talking holiday homes. And I think, you know, equally for anyone out there who is actually in a holiday sort of home kind of destination, get on Instagram.
Yeah, look, you can't underestimate the power of specialising.
Yeah.
In a certain area, and not being afraid that you're going to shut out other segments, because I think there's nothing stopping you from going down that path later.
No.
And opening up the opening up the market to those other segments later. But if you can specialise and niche down very early on in your career, I think even for agencies starting out, it is such a powerful thing, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree.
The examples that you've given are perfect examples of that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, where we're sort of heading with all of this is that if you can give someone a really wow experience it probably doesn't matter which niche it is. Like you might be the go-to guy for holiday homes or for seniors or for, for airline pilots or whatever. But, but you're able to give that niche a wow experience because you know it so well. And it is entirely feasible then that someone would say, look, I just dealt with this guy. He was amazing. Like normally he works with airline pilots, but I'll give you his name anyway.
For sure.
Again, it sort of comes down to the way that the way that people remember you.
Yeah, great marketing tip. Well, something that you recently put together, you've mentioned it a few times, is the report, the 2020 or Getting Ready for 2020 report.
Yeah.
Where you discussed all things disruption and look, some pretty impressive panelists. Tell us a little bit about the report and some key findings that real estate professionals should know about what they should do to get ready for 2020.
Yeah, so it's
which is only 4 years away.
I know, actually. Well, yeah, it's what, 9 weeks to Christmas.
Scary.
Scary.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2020 is only 4 years away, and we looked further out than 2020. But you know, like I guess, you know, the thing is we wanted this report to have some good takeaways in it about what you could do now to get ready, because I think the rate that technology is changing and improving things for us in general is not going to stop. It's only going to speed up. And there's been, you know, like I guess the thing is with all the talk of disruption and things like that, what we wanted to do is we want to get some smart people in the room and just really pull it apart, like, you know, try and break the unbroken and without the headlines and the sensational and the scary and all the rest of it, just to sort of see, you know, like where these people who are sort of massive thinkers thought that it all might go. And we did ask people from outside the real estate industry as well as inside the real estate industry, remembering, of course, that disruption normally comes from outside rather than inside. So to get a fresh perspective and on that sort of thing. So we asked along Michael Ozipoff from Telstra, and he's Telstra's chief futurist. I don't think that's his official title, but that's what he's that's what he's known as, and I want his job badly.
What a great title.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, his job really is to think about the future of telecommunications in Australia and just an amazing mind. From PwC, we had Jeremy Thorpe, and PwC recently done some studies with Google about technology and productivity and small business and all that sort of thing. So, and Jeremy's also, you know, probably one of the best economists in the country. So we really wanted to leverage his expertise and some of the stuff that he'd done. We really wanted a venture capitalist in the room because, you know, obviously with the money that was floating around America in venture capital, we were sort of thinking, well, let's get someone in who's got that sort of a, you know, that sort of a slant on things. So we invited in Jo Burston from Rare Birds, and she is a disruptor and has been a disruptor for years, particularly in the human resources sector. And she's also spent time on Necker Island with Richard Branson. So
there you go.
You know, she's learnt from
There's a name drop.
Yeah, so she's learnt from, you know, she's learnt from one of the major disruptors, you know, out there. And Rob Marston, who is a university lecturer, so, you know, right on the cutting edge of all things digital. And, of course, Mark Cohen from Domain, who helped us put the report together.
Yep.
So he's the chief technical officer of Domain Group. So he's right up the top there, you know, thinking about what technology Domain Group are going to be, you know, using in the next 20 years. So we put them all in a room with a brief of, you know, let's talk technology, let's talk productivity, let's talk disruption, let's talk, you know, what's going on in the future. Is there anything that you're seeing now which, you know, is potentially the Uber of real estate or a disruptor? So that was the premise that we got everyone together. And it was a really good discussion that day. As you know, we've sort of put together a 36-page report on some of the things that people need to be thinking about in the future.
Yeah, I think it's – and congratulations, by the way. It's really comprehensive, and I know how much time you guys would have put into getting that together. Something I really liked about it was it's very easy to read, and a lot of those industry reports sometimes can be very – look, almost overwhelming and hard to digest, but it's quite easy to read, and you've broken it down into those certain sections. Can you maybe just allude to some of those sections and chapters, if you will? And something I really liked about that was you didn't just focus on technology and that sort of thing. You went into business models and all that sort of thing, correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So it won't be just technology, obviously, that impacts, you know, what we're doing now. It will be other things in and around that, like the way that we operate and all that sort of stuff. So first of all, we looked at small business in general and what the problems were for small business and how well small business are using technology right now.
Yeah.
And then we sort of looked at, you know, like whether real estate jobs would be disrupted by technology. We looked at different revenue models. So, you know, again, we've seen a few different revenue models come and go, some new ones popping up.
So just to pause you there for a sec, do you mean in terms of agent commissions, or are you talking about potentially even agents, you know, talking about profit share and that sort of thing? Did you cover all of the above?
Yeah, so I am talking about the holy grail of commission. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, like what we've seen in Australia and in America is we've seen different sorts of consulting models, like, you know, you know, I think one of them is, you know, for example, we'll provide you with a mentor and, you know, you'll pay us a fixed fee. There's some in America right now, which is just pay us what you think we're worth.
Wow.
Wow.
What do you mean by that?
Well, how satisfied are you as a customer?
Right.
You know, and how well did we do in selling your home? You pay us what
they pick their fee.
They pick their fee.
Wow.
I
think every salesperson now has just fallen off their off their chair.
Yeah. I will say one thing though, you know, like that guy was on stage at Inman. It was in one of the sessions that I was in, and you could have heard a pin drop during that time as well. And I sort of think, okay, so this might be a little controversial what I'm about to say, but you don't see successful agents dropping their fees like that. And something that came up in the 2020 report, it was something that Michael Ozipoff said, is that, you know, again, it's about knowing who you're selling to. And he said it's really simple. It comes down to whether the person you're selling to is from Planet Story or Planet Price. And so if you're from Planet Story, you'll go for the whole you know, the story behind what I'm going to do for you and how I'm going to
negotiate the highest price.
And all of that sort of stuff. Or if you're from Planet Price, none of that is going to phase you anyway, no matter how much you're sold to. You'll always look for the cheapest price. Now, that's not to say that someone from Planet Price is never going to cross over to Planet Story. It just might be that they'll go for the cheaper price that Planet Story can provide. And so that's where you get, you know, there's always going to be room in the market for discounters, and there's always going to be room in the market for the people that, you know, provide that full service, because consumers are different. And if I'm from Planet Story, I'm going to go this way. And if I'm from Planet Price, I'm going to go that way. The way Michael saw it is no more difficult than that.
Interesting. Yeah.
And, you know, this is coming from a guy who's in an industry where, you know, telecommunications has been disrupted over and over and over again, you know, particularly with price dropping and things like that. I mean, you know, when you first went to get a mobile phone, you know, mobile phone calls were really expensive, and now, you know, you can get unlimited data packs and, you know, like, and you know, when someone drops the price, that's the new price.
Yep.
But it's about knowing your market. So, you know, like, someone's dropped the price on my data on my iPhone, but I'm a disciple of Steve Jobs and I'm from Planet Story there. So, you know, I'm going to get the best data plan I can because that's going to work better on my phone.
Mm.
And I don't think, you know, again, drawing a parallel, like, business is business. It's, you know, it's not going to be too different in real estate, I don't think, where, you know, you will get people that will like the discounting from Planet Price.
Yeah.
And you'll get the people that want Planet Story.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a really interesting point. I was speaking to my father just recently. They've been considering selling their house for a little while. They've actually had it on the market with two different agents over the last, I think, 18 months. And I asked Dad, I said, look, why don't you sell it yourself? You know, this is probably controversial to some of the agents that I work with, but yep. I said, look, he's constantly talking about agents and saying, look, he's just one of those old guys who's set in his ways and, look, you know, I'm sick of agents and that sort of thing. I'm sure that he's not the only one out there, but he just said, look, I said, why don't you sell it yourself? And he said, I would. And I asked him, what's stopping you? And he said, the only thing that is stopping me is having access to the audience to list my property. Mm. And meaning, you know, realestate.com.au domain. In his mind, he thought that he can only list on those portals if he had an agent representing him. And after a little bit of education, he discovered that he didn't need an agent to do that. But it had nothing to do with, you know, negotiating the highest price or selling the fastest or, you know, navigating all the legal paperwork that you have to do. It had nothing to do with that, which is, I think what a lot of agents have vendors to believe in is that's why you select an agent, is to cover all those things. He wasn't interested in any of that. He just wanted to sell the property, you know, didn't care about price and that sort of thing at that point. All he wanted to do was get in front of that audience. That was the only reason why he didn't sell the house himself. So I think what you're sort of alluding to there, you know, talking about Planet Price and Planet Story, I think he's kind of in that camp over yep. there that's thinking, look, you know, price isn't, I don't care if you can negotiate the highest price for me because he didn't really believe an agent could. So I think you're always going to come up against those two different camps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a great analogy.
And again, it's about, you know, like, knowing your market, like, for sure. Speak to the people that, you know, that
what's driving them to sell the property in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. And the, you know, like, it, speak to your tribe, like, work out who the tribe is that you want to sell to and speak to them.
For sure.
And and provide them that wow service. And I still think that those agents will be successful and they'll still come out with full fees.
Definitely. Yeah. What are some other things that came out of the report? What are some other interesting stats that you think real estate pros might be able to take away?
Yeah. So there's a few things. So Jeremy brought up something interesting as well when we were talking about disruptors, and he sort of said, you know, is urbanisation itself a disruptor? And by urbanisation, I mean the proliferation of apartments in built-up city areas and things like that, because what you're seeing overseas now is that, you know, there'll be big developments and then there'll be a case of, you know, more people moving towards the city because that's where the services are. You know, if you want your dry cleaning delivered, you really can't live out in Broken Hill. You've got to live close to the CBD. If you want, you know, Menulog and to deliver your, you know, your takeaway, you need to live close to the CBD. If you want to take advantage of all these new grocery providers that will provide you a recipe card and fresh food, you need to live close to the CBD if you want to take advantage of share cars. And so that's going to create more and more and more apartments. And what you're seeing overseas particularly is that, you know, it's like, it's a bit like a casino really. Like, you know, you'll get these younger people sort of coming through and the block of apartments might have, you know, access to share cars. It might have, you know, a health centre, it might have a supermarket, but it'll be, let's all play in this one casino.
Mm.
And then the developer might sort of go, well, why do I need to outsource this?
Interesting.
Let's just insource this. I don't need a real estate agent specifically to run and manage this.
Well, so. Just on that, I think a parallel that I can share with everyone is when I was still, I guess, on the tools, so to speak, in the property management space, there were a lot of developers who were outsourcing properties for a long, long time. And they started, as everyone did, all the principals that have started to realise the value of the rent roll side of the business, as did the developers. And what they started doing was they're no longer outsourcing any of their properties. They started their own property management business inside the development firm.
Yeah.
And there's one particular business that I recall having a chat to, and they had, I think it was over 6,000 managements or 6,000 properties with another 10,000 on the books to be built in the next. So I think that's a really interesting point that you've made around urbanisation. I don't think it's just in the sales space, but in property management as well.
Sure.
It's an interesting point.
And then in property management, let's take that one step further. So this is probably not just about the 2020 report, and as well as something that Michael Ozopoff's pretty passionate about, which is this Internet of Things.
Mm.
For if you're not sure about what the Internet of Things is or the IoT, it's like something that you will see, quite a lot, I would say, in the next few years. It is devices communicating with each other without human intervention.
Mm-hmm.
So think of it as Google's just bought a company called Nest.
Mm-hmm.
And in a Mercedes car, you can have a Nest thermostat, which is you can turn that on when you're sort of 10 kilometres from home. And that will control the heating and cooling in your house.
From your car dashboard.
From your car dashboard.
Wow.
So this is the Internet of Things. So that's one non-human device talking to another non-human device via the internet, obviously.
Mm.
And it's quite feasible that, that a lot of devices like that within the home will be connected.
Mm.
And so via the internet, of course, and they will talk to each other without our intervention. And so from a property management perspective, and even in, let's think about a big development, probably, you're going to have still baby boomers who have got the money, they're going to be doing the owning. You're going to have millennials perhaps renting because, property's getting so expensive that they may not want to own, or it may suit them to rent for that whole reason of being close to the CBD that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But inside the home, you're going to have probably going to be furnished, so you're probably going to have fridges and things like that. And so in the future, it is quite conceivable that property managers will have a dashboard in front of them, a bit like air traffic control of their properties. and you will proactively be able to tell when an appliance is going to go out.
Mm.
Or, you'll see a red dot or something like that where someone's fridge has gone out. And rather than you making a maintenance call, that will have already alerted whoever your supplier is to come and fix it. And so, again, no intervention. And that's what we mean by technology and smart use of technology becoming now, it mightn't be exactly that. I'm kind of staring into my own
crystal ball. Well, I was just
going
to say, I think a lot of property managers are kind of, when is this coming, Sam? When is this happening?
I think that's one of the other things that we sort of said in the 2020 report is that, the where technology will really make a difference is when you elevate the technology above the process. So, at Inman, I'm not sure if you saw them or not, and I can't think of their name now too, but, we talked about data being the new currency a lot.
Mm.
And there was this company at Inman that absolutely floored me with the technology that they have. So via data, they can pick a suburb and look at all of the houses in that street, the age of the property, the age of the people in it. Now, America's privacy laws, freedom of information is slightly different to what it is in Australia.
Mm.
But they can pick a property and within a reasonable tolerance in a street come out with like an iTunes top 20 of which one's going to sell first in order. And what they do, again, thinking about how to market to these people is that they have a fair indication of how old they are, how long they've been in the property and all that sort of thing. So you can sort of go to them and say, rightio, I want postcode 2089, and then they will market to the people that they think are on the top of the list for you, so that you're not sort of wasting time.
It's like lead scoring almost, right?
Lead scoring, yeah, like prospecting to people that, you know, are not likely to sell.
Yeah.
Now, again, you know, like you sort of think, okay, let's, how would that work in Australia? So our laws are a little bit different. And so, you know, I sort of thought, well, that's probably a fair way away. And then Rob Marston kind of piped up and said, actually, we're kind of working on something very similar to that at the moment. And I kind of went, oh. But, you know, like he was sort of saying, well, you know, like build a dashboard that comes above the process. So, you know, like what else is sort of going on around when people are moving, and how do you take the pain away from people moving? Like, so it's a case of, well, you know, do you need a removalist? Do you need insurance? Do you need, you know, can you overlay mortgage data on the top so that I know that not only has this guy been in this same house for 10 years and his kids are just about to go off to university or something like that, but also, by the way, he's pre-approved for a $2 million mortgage.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would mean that he or she. Was probably a good prospect to talk
to. Definitely. I think that's something that is getting talked a lot about. Everyone's heard the term big data and it gets talked about at virtually every conference at the moment. But I think it's something that we can no longer be scared about. We've just got to embrace it. And I think from a marketing perspective, it gives you so much power to have data, because I think what it allows you to do is not think of it as advertising. Let me premise that by saying I think you can give people content and marketing that you know for a fact they genuinely want to receive, instead of the stuff that everyone does. And I get, you know, 1,000 letterbox drops in my letterbox every week. I don't know about you, but we're definitely, we only bought 3 years ago. We have no intent. I'm not interested in the local market at all. Have no interest. But I think what it's going to allow people to do is to market to people they know for a fact are interested in what they have to sell.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah. So under this sort of system, or under this sort of thinking, you know, like I'm not going to market to you my just solds or anything like that. What I'm going to give to you is my local guide to the community.
Right.
You know, I'm going to tell you what new restaurants have popped up and all the rest of it, so that I'm kind of keeping in touch with you in a non-annoying way, because I know that you're probably not ready to sell yet.
Absolutely. And I think taking it to another level as well, you know that whether you've just sold or helped them purchase a property, you know that they're not going to buy or sell for a little while.
Yeah.
Things could change. You know, we all know things can change very quickly, and they may, but I think once they've past that transaction point and gone through settlement, I think what it also allows you to do is not only know, okay, I need to give them information that's about the local community, but data and platforms like Facebook especially give you the opportunity to give them content that you know that they're genuinely interested in, not just the fact that they're no longer in the market to buy, but actually, you know, what they're interested in. Do they, you know, follow the local football team? You know, what causes do they care about?
Yeah.
And you have the ability to create content that they genuinely want to receive. And I think it's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for one thing.
Yeah.
Is that, you know.
Without being too creepy too.
Yeah, without being too creepy about it. You know, it mightn't be you that's creating the content. It might be somebody else that is doing it for you.
You're just the marketplace and handing it over to them. Love that. Well, when people are talking about disruption, we've spoken about technology a lot. Everyone thinks disruption and technology kind of, you know, go hand in hand. But in your opinion, how can real estate professionals leverage technology to be the disruptor themselves?
Yeah, I think that, you have to realise right here, right now, that your data is gold. And it is, I think without a doubt, data will be the new currency. So probably the most jaw-dropping moment I had in that whole 2020 panel thing was, you know, when we were looking at different revenue models. So, Michael had his Planet Story, Planet Price, and, yeah, people will drop and that's the new price and all the rest of it. But, taking the Internet of Things one step further, right, you might have an internet-enabled fridge, and that will become an advertising medium in the future. So, you know, you might have a fridge that is provided to you, say, for example, for free, but you'll get messages depending on your demographic on that fridge, you know, and it could be for a mortgage, it could be for something else, it could be, you know, for the, you know, what's coming up on Netflix. But that's the way data is going, is that, you know, like, and that's the way that the internet is going, is that, you know, you will have messages tailored to you. And so, you know, then, you know, taking that one step further, Rob sort of said, well, you know, could you sell a house at 0% commission but be remunerated from all of the people around that process? So you might sort of say, you know, your moving house, you might be interested in this removalist, you might be interested in this connections company, you might be interested in a mortgage from this place, you might be interested in, you know, so there's all that, you know, you might be interested in a Westfield voucher for new furniture.
Look, I think the light bulb's kind of tinkering on and off here for a lot of real estate salespeople, especially thinking, how can I, you know, because once you finish the sale, obviously your commission from that person's not coming again until they sell again. So recurring revenue, I think you've alluded to a couple of things. That's a very, very interesting topic. It's not something I've really thought about. I'm sure a lot of people are the same.
Yeah, it sort of, I mean, it came out of the blue for me because, you know, like, you know, when Rob said, you know, I sort of think, you know, like, yeah, that's quite disruptive. I sort of went, that's an understatement. Yeah, that's probably a really disruptive way of thinking. But, you know, like it might be true. So, you know, what is your average commission on a, you know, on $1 million property? You know, and how many, you know, like instead of Westfield spending a great deal of money on television advertising, which, you know, we sort of know costs a bit, and these days with Netflix, not many people are watching ads. So is it feasible that they would reroute that budget into something else because they know that you are a prospect that is moving, that is going to need furniture when you move?
I think that's pretty scary. I think a lot of people's minds are blowing now. But look, it's something to think about, and I think reoccurring revenue, I mean, in any business, especially in the software business, property management, we all know that's the value of your business, and where the multiplier of your business can change dramatically. So I think, you know, it's not something that gets talked about, but I think it's a valid point, is how can salespeople develop a reoccurring revenue-based business by selling real estate?
Yeah.
And I think you've kind of given a few secrets away.
Might have given a few secrets away. Open up the can of worms. Yeah. I mean, I mean, look, I'm not saying that that's something that's, you know, I'm not here to scare anyone, but, you know, like when you're sort of talking disruptive thinking, that's the sort of thinking, that's the place you've got to go to.
For sure.
Which is what would create true disruption.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. That's
So that's the thing. And I was just on the subject of data and where, you know, I mean, what to do now, you know, if you really just got to get your house in order, like, you know, have a CRM system. You know, the CRMs of the future will, you know, they'll be able to do predictive things. I was reading Salesforce.com. Probably a lot of people are familiar with Salesforce.com. It was one of the first sort of cloud CRMs. A lot of the Salesforce.com execs are defecting to this other company at the moment called Inside Sales.
Okay.
And they're a cloud CRM as well. But what they do differently is they can sort of, you know, they're starting to put some artificial intelligence into their software and they're able to tell you what they think is the best time for you to call a particular prospect, time of day, day of week, month, for you to not only catch this person but for them to be receptive to your phone call.
It's fascinating.
So, you know, so it's really fascinating stuff, and I think, you know, the CRMs of the future, you know, and we're starting to see it already, they're going to connect social, they're going to connect, you know, other other people's data systems. And so, you know, really it's about, you know, working your database and being able to analyse your database. So, you know, who am I selling to? What's the demographic of my neighbourhood? What's their income? What's their, you know, so that you can actually build up that picture and really give your market that wow experience.
Well, I think, yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And look, the experience, the customer experience is pretty much the only thing we have left to differentiate from another competitor.
Yeah.
And something I think was in the front of your report that I read, which was a great way of putting it, I think, was that things like Facebook, iPhones, all of our iThings 10 years ago did not exist.
Yeah.
And I remember graduating high school back in 2002, and I remember we still had the Nokia 6110 or something, and that was all the rage in our graduating class that year.
I love the flip phone, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you could still, it was a bit old school, you know, when you sort of had a disagreement with someone, you could still, you know, slam that sucker down.
You do it now, you break the phone.
Yeah, I know, it's just not the same at all.
No, but I think you've made a great point. It's only 10 years ago, and we are only 4 years away. I mean, we're celebrating just yesterday. We're recording this, what is it, the 22nd of October. Yesterday was Back to the Future Day.
Yes.
And I think if we think back to they got a few things right.
Yeah.
But if we think back...
Skateboards are still not hovering.
Well, I don't think we're far off. I'm sure they'll figure that one out. But I think it's interesting to think back only 10 years. Those things did not exist, and we rely on them. If we took them away right now, all of our iThings and even, I remember dial-up internet was all that we had available back then as well. So I think if we dial it up only 4 years away, it's kind of like if we don't start now, we're going to be left behind, right?
Yeah, and it's just really, some people listening to this might be thinking, oh, my God, you know, like how am I going to navigate this? And I would sort of say, look, nothing is going to happen overnight.
No.
You know, like there's not going to be any sort of Armageddon or anything like that. So, you know, like but... you know, think about, you know, what you can improve incrementally every day. So it might just be, well, you know, like let's just focus on this section of the database, or let's just really have a look and make sure, like, you know, again, one of the statistics that Michael threw at us was, that people that go cloud CRM, for example, they're not getting out. So as soon as you get into the cloud, that's kind of, you know, that's where people are staying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Once you're on a smartphone, that's where people are staying. So, you know, like, think about, you know, whether that's what you're doing now as far as, you know, your CRM system is going to sustain you into the future. And, you know, like just even if it's just sort of, you know, like coaching your staff incrementally to just, you know, sort of complete the gaps and keep that up to date and all that sort of thing. And you know, like we're talking about jobs of the future. One of those jobs of the future might in fact just be someone that looks after the database.
Mm.
So, well, it's already happening. The jobs will change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's already happening in a lot of businesses as well. I'll take it one step further, and something that I'm very passionate about is I always say that I started learning when I left high school.
Yeah.
And look, I call myself an infovore. I'm constantly looking for, information. And I'm constantly consuming content, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a video, whether it's a blog, whether it's a conference. And I think people need to get into that mindset of consuming content, because if they're worried about where do we start, or I'm worried about, you know, how to navigate all this, I think the first place to start is online or at a conference, or just be in the mindset of learning, constantly learning. And you don't have to be going overseas to conferences like Inman or anything like that.
No.
You can subscribe to a podcast, this one, of course. But look, plenty of other podcasts and video, online video blogs and things like that that kind of give the secret away, right?
Yeah. It's something that Joe said, actually, is that you've really just got to have a sense of curiosity.
Like, absolutely.
Absolutely. And if there was one takeaway, that would be it, is like, you know, really start looking at what's around you and what's going on around you, and ask the questions. You know, like the trouble is, and this was one of the first topics we dealt with in the 2020 sort of forum that we had, was there is a big gap between for small business right now. Like, they're sort of saying that small business could be something like 44% more productive now if we use technology better. Mm. Now the problem for small businesses that, you know, and a lot of real estate agents would fall into this category, some not so, but you can't afford to have your IT, like an expensive IT guru sitting in your office. You know, but what they're saying now, obviously, for all the reasons that we've talked about, is that, you know, technology strategy and business strategy should be one and the same.
Absolutely.
And so if you don't have that expertise in-house, you know, like reach out to, you know, someone else, reach out to an accountant, reach out to someone you trust, you know, like, the, you know, there are other, even your clients, you know, like it might be that, you know, in your database, you already know someone who's pretty good at the internet or works for Telstra. You know, just start having the conversations. And, you know, and I think, yeah, like just that sense of curiosity is what will, you know, sustain you through these sort of, let's call them interesting times.
Well, look, I think on that note, Sam, I think a lot of people's minds are blowing. I think we've only really scratched the surface of this stuff, and we could talk about this sort of stuff
all day.
Before we sort of wrap things up, where can people download a copy of the report?
So from eliteagent.com.au/2020report is where to download the report from. And, you know, I'm happy to take any questions or anything like that. So if you have any questions about some of the topics that were raised or anything like that, feel free to send me an email.
And what's your email, just for our listeners so they can get in contact with you?
Samantha@eliteagent.com.au.
Fantastic. Well, listeners, you can find all of the resources that Sam has shared with us today along with all of the show notes by visiting our website at steps.com.au/podcasts. Well, Sam, on behalf of our listeners, thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your award last night, by the way.
Thank you.
And from an amazing report and all the success of Elite Agent over the last 12 months, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on your show, Josh. It's fabulous. And I, you know, thank you for being in the magazine too.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
All right, cool.
Thanks for listening to Real Estate Pros. If you like this episode, please subscribe and you'll be notified of new episodes. I'm Josh Cobb. Now go out and grow your business.